we're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Perrin.
And I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And welcome back to the show.
I was going to say we're down one. I'm a little spacey in this outer space adventure.
Indeed, for reasons outside of his control, James is unable to join us tonight. We know you'll be out there safe, James, and we're going to miss you.
Yeah, hopefully it's not like Lost in Space where he crashes on an alien planet and he's like an 8-year-old kid with a robot or something.
Oh my gosh, can I just say that show should not be anywhere near as good as it is?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Is it good?
Oh wow, yeah, the new Netflix remake of Lost in Space. We're not talking about the 2000s era remake of movie, though they have that on Netflix right now too, which gets confusing when you're searching. But the new Lost in Space series is absolutely fantastic. The dynamic and how they've recast how the crash happens and what they're actually doing in space to make it more believable is great. And the cast is fantastic. The new Dr. Smith is one of the most evil characters I've seen on TV, and I watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, man. Is it something that somebody who's never seen the original can appreciate?
Yeah. If you haven't seen the original at all, you can totally still enjoy this show. But if you have seen the original, you'll get a lot of chuckles as how they've completely radically redone parts of it. Though you still have your, of course, Will Robinson and his lovable robot.
Yeah, if only we were talking about mechanics today, but that's not our topic, is it?
No, we're not. We are going to be talking about the Solarian today. Starlarian is, of course, Starfinder's one unique class. It's the one class that doesn't have an obvious one-to-one analog with anything else in science fiction gaming.
Yeah, I feel like it was Robert McCrary who originally said that, like, maybe it was Owen, I don't remember, but somebody was telling me this story about how the Paizo developers were going through their ideas for Starfinder, and they were like, Envoy is kind of like our bard, Soldier's kind of like our fighter, Mystic's kind of like our cleric, and then I feel like in the story it's Robert McCreary who says it, but maybe it was Sutter, but somebody says, okay, so what are we doing that's new? And everyone goes silent, and they think. And the result of that think is the Solarian. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Perrin? Was it worth it?
The Solarian definitely has a unique flavor that sort of fits it in with the whole Starfinder theme, the whole science fantasy bubble. And I mean that quite literally, because the entire flavor of the Solarian is drawing powers from stars themselves.
Are you saying that they're literally Starfinders?
Well, I don't know if finding counts because they just get that little pet one, the little mote. That's always great.
That's true.
It also is one of the more controversial classes in Starfinder for several mechanical reasons, as well as just grasping the concept of it. And I think a lot of it is new, and a lot of it has to do with reasons we'll discuss when we start breaking down the class in a minute. But before we get...
Because it wouldn't be No Direction if we didn't rip something apart mercilessly.
Oh, we don't always rip things apart mercilessly.
We often rip things apart mercilessly.
Mostly when you're a guest.
Hey, no, that's not fair. I have watched the Shifter episode. I've seen what Ryan can do when angry.
Oh,
I don't know what the number is, fans, but if you can go back in time and watch Ryan's review of The Shifter, man, oh man, there's a reason why I don't enjoy debating Ryan, and that episode is a great show of how scary it can be.
Oh, there's. I think the only other time we've been more negative was one of the novels. The Wizard's Mask, Ed Greenwood's novel.
I remember what you said about the Advanced Class Guide, Param. I don't think you do.
I know. The Advanced Class Guide was well-intentioned.
Oh, that's fair. Well, why don't we stop beating around the bush and dive into the Solarian?
Well, we do have a couple of housekeeping things to address before we dive in. One is that this episode is filmed in front of a live Twitch audience, and I see you guys already in chat. Please chat with amongst yourselves and add us during the show. If you have any questions at all, we'll answer them throughout the show. So if you want to know anything about the Solarian, about anything about No Direction, or anything about me or Alex, just chime in and we will totally answer it.
Or if we get something horrifically wrong, feel free to correct us. But I feel like I know what I'm talking about this time. I'm pretty excited.
And we also need to mention that this show is brought to you thanks to the wonderful backing of our Patreon backers. You guys help make this possible. We appreciate each and every one of you, and thank you so much. If you wish to also support the network, you can subscribe to us via our Patreon link at nodirectionpodcast.com.
It's also kind of literally brought to you by the Roll for Combat friends.
Oh, because, yes. That was
we should probably tell them that story at the end, huh?
All right. So for those of you who may have noticed that on Thursday night, our website went down. Website's going down is bad.
We're doing this now, I guess.
Yes, let's go ahead and do it now. Website's going down is bad. We call our host up immediately, start trying to resolve things. I go dive into the code and start ripping the database apart, just trying to figure out what in the world is wrong with our website. And I can't find a darn thing wrong with it, except for the fact that it isn't working. Our hosts, I don't want to go into things that might be potentially libelous or brought up in court, but let's just say our host was unable to resolve the issue in a timely manner. And so for the past several days, you've seen various notes go up on our Facebook page talking about it. We put up a temporary page saying, hey, we're down. Here's links to our socials where you can still get some of the content. And we're glad for anybody that tuned in to watch us live without us being able to put this on the website in advance, because it just went up hours ago and we weren't really sure. We wanted to make sure everything was good and it was up for everyone, because we had to move to a new server. And that wouldn't be possible if, at our 11th hour of absolute peak frustration, Stephen Glicker from the Roll for Combat's Actual Play podcast, he's the DM on that show, and their primary host, messaged us, volunteered his services, got his team involved. He knows his web stuff. His team knows their web stuff. We were able to work together and get the site online after working together for a couple of days. And we're back up on fresh server. It's faster than ever, better than ever. Mm-hmm. And we hope that this never happens again. So the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play podcast, those guys, and Steven specifically, thank you so much for helping us get back here. You guys should check those guys out. They started a new Starfinder Society game. They're also running through Dead Suns, but if you want to get a good taste of them, they just started up a Starfinder Society game where they've been running through 1-10, the Half-Alive Streets, with Jason Keeley as one of their players. So it's awesome, and it's a great way to get acquainted with the podcast, and you should go check them out. They're great. We'll have links in the show notes and stuff for that.
Indubitably we shall. Thank goodness that we can do this show, because like we've had a really hectic like April.
Oh my gosh, this has been a crazy, crazy April. We missed the last show due to I forget even why, but we missed the last show, and No Direction has just been crazy, just getting everything organized, and of course we're gearing up for PaizoCon.
Right, we totally are. I'm excited. I'm gonna play the Eoxian one. But I feel like I should save that for later, because we really need to talk about the Solarian.
Yeah, let's get into the Solarian. We will talk about PaizoCon after.
We shall. It'll be great.
All right, so what is the summary of the Solarian before we dive into its stat block?
Well, it is a full base attack bonus class that has the standard trappings that we've seen of that level of martial prowess in Starfinder, meaning that it has 7 plus con stamina points, 7 hit points, base attack bonus that goes up every level, and it has kind of a low number of skill ranks. It has 4 plus int, but it does have an overall better mastery of skill than the soldier does. So, like, if you're trying to go for skills and you want a full base stat character that is pretty good at them, Solarian is a little bit better, just by a hair, and we'll talk about more why later. Mm-hmm. They have a key ability score of Charisma, which is only shared with the Envoy, and you're suggested to have either a decent dex or strength, and you probably want an okay constitution if you're going to survive, especially if you want to be, because you're either in melee or you have a huge armor class, meaning you're probably going to get shot at a lot.
Yep.
Being shot at is bad, okay.
The Solarian is also a class that can be either melee or ranged, which, with strong preference towards melee.
That is true. I mean, objectively, it's not true, but subjectively, it's very true. Yeah. And we'll talk about why in a little bit.
And you mentioned the skill points. They also have a fair amount of class skills. The Solarian
way more than the soldier.
Oh yeah, totally, and with a bonus at first level. So they, by default, all Solarians have acrobatics, athletics, diplomacy, intimidate, mysticism, perception, physical science, profession, sense motive, and stealth. And they, at first level, they also get an ability called Skill Adept that lets them choose any two additional skills to add to their class skill list, which makes them crazy flexible in their skills and out-of-combat utility to the party.
They're definitely flexible in ways that a lot of even other classes just aren't. You can, the idea is that if you're playing a Solarian, what you were doing before you got these weird powers is sort of up to you. The class doesn't ever, like, when you're a soldier, the implication is that you've been fighting a lot. You know, you're some kind of mercenary or a professional government trained military expert. If you're an envoy, it says, hey, you're probably one of these things. If you're an operative, you're one of these things. The Solarian is very unique in that it assumes you were something else and just got these powers somehow. And the class doesn't really try to tell you where they came from, which is both a strength and a weakness of the class. On one hand, if you want to come up with a really cool backstory that says, like, oh, I found this ancient relic in my family's house, and it gave me all these incredible star powers, you can do that, and then you can use Skill Adept to explain what you did before you found that thing. But on the other hand, if you are looking for a explanation as to, you know, how this class fits into the Pact Worlds and beyond, you kind of don't get it. The description is more about the action of what it is like to be a Solarian than what they do, which is something I hope we see expanded upon in the future, because right now I don't feel that the Solarian has a very strong place in, like, what it is or where it comes from. What do you think, Param?
I think that it's super flavorful, but I definitely look forward to see how they work, like, the lore of the Solarian into the setting going forward.
Mm-hmm. Like, they exist. There's one in the Dead Sun's adventure path, and it's in a place that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's in, like, a place that's devoted to, like, the study of the stars. So when you see the Solarian there, you're like, oh, okay, I understand that. Mm-hmm. But it's not really quantified, you know?
And they also hint that they're, like, Solarian temples out there, so they're kind of, like, almost like they have this monastic quality to them, which I think would cool, but, I mean, space monk star controllers are fun.
Well, I mean, not to confirm or deny your theory, but the second volume of Dead Sons is called Temple of the Twelve.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, just a little.
Okay. So let's go into, like, what makes a Solarian a Solarian. The main reason that a Solarian is a Solarian is because their primary power is a power called Solar Manifestation, which you get at first level and is the base form of your power. And you get to choose whether or not you have a weapon and or armor, and it's tied into one of the two aspects of the Solarian. They got this dual aspect part of the class that they're constantly going to be balancing between white hot stars, or stars of any shape really, they can be any color, and black holes and gravity powers that those grant.
So cool.
And when you choose your manifestation, you either get armor, which can be any description you give it, but you can be really creative with what it looks like. Though I do like some of the art that I've seen of various pieces out there with like glowing light panels and auras. And then there is your weapon, or you can go with a melee weapon of any description you want, made out of either any color that a sun can be, blue, red, white, or yellow, or pitch black, because it's just a black hole that you're going to beat stick people with.
It's true. It's like the sword from the Goblins webcomic that Min-Max uses. Just black, nothing. It's super cool. I mean, of course, you wouldn't really... I'm trying to think how to describe this one part of the Solarian class that I actually really like. When I look at the Solarian, it's... Oh! You know what it is, Param?
What is it?
The Solarian is an improvement upon the design for the Vigilante.
You'll have to explain that concept.
So, in Pathfinder, the Vigilante is a class that has two separate identities, which are like modes. Mm-hmm. And you have a social mode and a Vigilante mode. But in Pathfinder, you get one power for each mode at every alternating level. So at a level when you're social, you get a social power, and at the next level, you get a Vigilante, and you go back and forth like that. And so what ends up happening is that if you really want to be good at being a Vigilante, there are levels where you get nothing useful to you. And if you really want to be cool and social, there are levels where you get nothing useful to you. But the Solarian also has a similar mode dynamic where you have the Graviton and the Proton modes. But their class feature called Stellar Revelations fixes the problem that the Vigilante has, which is the Solarian gets two Stellar Revelations, one for each mode, anytime they would be entitled to getting one. So at first level, you get one Graviton and one Proton. And then at fourth level, or second level, you get one Graviton, one Proton. And then you keep... I think that's how it works, right?
No.
You get two of them?
You start with two, and then you have to pick one, then the other. You only get one as you level
up. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But you have to
starting keep... Starting off, it works.
But you have to keep them balanced. If you ever have more than one on one side or the other, you're going to get penalized. And we need to go into... We need to do some background first before we get into that. Because... How this manifests is you have this little solar mote, which I'm assuming, it's this little ball of light or darkness that you can have floating around with you. And then you take that mote and you form it into whatever your manifestation is, either the weapon or the armor. With the armor, you get a +1 bonus to your kinetic and energy armor class. And that scales as you level up. It goes to +2 at level 10 and continues from there. You have to be wearing light armor. You can't wear heavy armor to use your solar armor. That does mean that you're the beefiest light armor wearer going, but you're going to be fast on your feet, but it does lock you out of any of the heavy armor options. Whereas with the weapon, it starts off doing a D6, no matter what shape you make it. You can try to make it nunchucks, you can try to make it a katana, you could try to make it just one big rock you hit people with. But it's always going to be a D6, and if you make it a pole arm, or you try to make it a chain whip or anything, you don't get any extra reach or anything like that from it. It's always going to be the same D6 damage. But it does count as an advanced melee weapon. It doesn't have any of those penalties that primitive weapons have.
Mm-hmm. So, in chat, actually, someone literally just posted Baratorb B1989 says that the armor seems very underpowered compared to the weapon progression. And so that's something I have a lot of thoughts on. How about you?
I agree that I have thoughts on that, and we totally need to put a pin in that because I don't want to go into a pure negative before we started talking about what's cool with this class.
I mean, yes, I suppose we should keep going.
But hey, preview of what we're going to talk about later. But the Solarian, the weapon mode is pretty cool. And using the weapon mode, you can get the Solarian is possible to be one of the highest damage outputs in all of Starfinder using the manifestations.
It's very interesting because the soldier has more abilities that give the soldier better damage from the melee strikes gear boost. I can't remember exactly what it's called. It might be melee striker, but that basically lets you add an additional 50% of your strength to damage rolls as a soldier. Instead, the Solarian has an ability called flashing strikes that you get at 7th level that reduces the penalties that you take up for full attacking. It's essentially an extra +1 to hit. So if you're a soldier versus a Solarian who take the same feat line, as a Solarian, you are 5% more likely to hit, which is actually a lot of damage going in the long term.
Because the damage math when you're doing calculations in Pathfinder is, to a point, your 2-hit bonus in percentage is just a straight average damage increase until you get to the point that you can't miss, and then the further increases don't equal pure percentage, because every miss is zero damage.
Yeah, exactly. Which is one of the advantages that the Solarian has. Another ability that they get is that eventually they get these very specialized versions of the Revelations called Zenith for the Revelations, which tend to be, instead of being like, this one is Proton, this one is Graviton, they're Revelations that usually have special powers that involve a sort of, like, a capstone is a good way to put it. It's not like a capstone in the sense that it's super powerful, but when you are fully attuned to a specific element, you just like writhe with that power. And I'm actually looking it over. That's what I was thinking of when I was talking about the Stellar Revelations before. Mm-hmm. With Zenith Revelations, you get one from each, one for Proton and one for Graviton every time you get one. You don't get them nearly as often, but you kind of get these both. And that's sort of where I was going with, where to a certain level, this class sort of feels like it acknowledges the problems that having two separate modes that you are expected to use both of them has, and then kind of eases it a little bit by saying, okay, every now and then we'll give you things for both of them.
And that brings up the concept of the stellar modes, which is how the Solarian is going to be interacting with their power. A Solarian has Graviton mode or Photon mode, and when you get into combat against a significant foe, you can begin attuning to one of those two modes. When you're in, you're unattuned any other time, or when you're between modes. With Graviton mode, if you start attuning to it, when you enter Graviton mode, you gain 1 Graviton attunement point and become Graviton attuned. Some of your stellar revelations and Graviton powers get stronger if you're Graviton attuned. And while you're in Graviton mode, you gain a +1 insight bonus to reflex saves, and this bonus increases by 1 for every 9 Solarian levels you have. Whereas in Photon mode, the same concept, but instead, you get +1 insight bonus to damage rolls, and this increases by 1 for every 6 Solarian levels you have. And when you get to 3 attunement, and you become fully attuned, that's when you can use those really powerful revelations.
The Zenith ones, assuming you have them unlocked. So one of the complaints that you see often about the Solarian is, oh, it takes so long to charge my modes. I'm never going to be in combat that long. I don't know about you, Perim, but in my experience, Starfinder combats last a lot longer. Our James and I have a mutual friend who, and not only was she our Reign of Winter GM, but she heavily plays Solarians in Starfinder. We've seen her go through abilities that require you to completely unattune and go all the way back to zero, and then work her way back up several times in some encounters. So, like, it depends mostly on your GM and how willing they are to throw longer fights at you, but the general assumption in Starfinder is that fights take more time, so you usually will fully attune in the course of an average fight.
Those fights definitely do take more rounds on average, especially at lower levels than I'm used to in Pathfinder. But they go faster. Starfinder combats, as far as real-world time, are resolving a lot faster for me than I'm used to in other D20 games. So I really appreciate that a Starfinder combat, it doesn't take me 45 minutes to get through, and it's one of the reasons that I've really loved my Starfinder play. But it is like dozens of rounds. Well, not really, but I've seen combats go into 10 plus rounds before. Yeah,
and that's sort of the point, that you have these fights that will last significantly longer. It's not always the fight you expect it to be, though.
No.
Like, a lot of times in our fights, we'll get stuck on things that, like, James never expected us to get stuck on. Like, we were fighting these, they're kind of like Kanyed columns from Rise of the Rune Lords, but spacey. And, like, we were in with those for, like, a good 6 rounds. Mm-hmm. And James is like, they're 1 CR lower than your APL. And we're like, we're sorry, we can't hurt them. we're quite a motley crew.
And in the first Starfinder Society scenario, that there's an alien that you can fight in one of the encounters, and that thing always goes long because players get scared of it, or, well, comically rolling nothing higher than a 4 repeatedly happens, and so just the combats just keep going along.
Yeah. So that's something that works towards its favor. But with that, the other big thing that you get as a Solarian, you get Solarian's Onslaught, which is exactly like Soldier's Onslaught. It lets you make an extra attack for a bigger penalty if you're feeling lucky, punk. And then you also have this really funny ability at 20th level that, like, the first half of Stellar Paragon confuses me. You can just make things brighter or darker around you. And in Starfinder, there's no darkness spell, so it's actually the only effect in Starfinder right now that can actually lower the light level. This 20th level capstone power, it's really funny.
But that's not all it does.
No, it's not all it does. It makes you... it makes you gather attunement points to get into one of your modes faster based on whether you made it brighter or darker. So basically you shed darkness and turn into a black hole faster, or you radiate light and turn into a star faster. And as it keeps going up, you actually gain the ability to spend resolve points to just fully attune yourself. Like, here's a resolve point. Vroom! And you're just super... It's great. And you can even, like, just swap around what mode you're in like a blink. It's really cool. It's a capstone that's interesting because we're used to seeing capstones that are very tactical, in the sense that they just outright stop problems for you, right? Like, that's what the soldier has, that's what kind of what the operative has. But here with the Solarian, the capstone is this, it basically just breaks all of the rules and says you do what you want when you want to.
Now, the rest of the Stellarians' powers are mostly in their stellar revelations that they learn, and then, of course, the zenith revelations as they level up. And all Stellarians start with the same 2 beginning revelations at first level. You get Black Hole and Supernova, and both of those are only usable when you're fully attuned. Now, other revelations you get as you level up are usable without being fully attuned, but these first ones you do. And then Black Hole is for Graviton, obviously, and I like this one more interesting. When you're fully attuned to Graviton, as a standard action, you can pull any number of creatures within 20 feet of you closer. You choose which creatures are affected and which ones aren't, and they must succeed at a fort save or be pulled 10 feet towards you. The range of this revelation and the distance pulled increased by 5 feet at 4th level and every 4 levels thereafter. Solid objects do not block this ability, but any creature that runs into a solid object ceases moving closer to you. If you're a melee character, being able to just, like, pull everybody straight towards you is going to be a really solid option, and it's flavorful as heck. Photon mode, you have Supernova, which is when you're fully photon, you can deal 1d6, as a standard action, you can deal 1d6 fire damage plus 1d6 additional fire damage per Solarian level to all creatures within 10 feet of you. So you just burst out. And if and then reflex save for half at ninth level increases to 15 feet and so on.
That is literally Robin's favorite in our games. Like, I have seen her explode so much. Like, I actually didn't know it was something that all Solarians could do. Mm-hmm. I was like, you just like blowing up. You take that on all your characters. She's like, all my characters get it for free. And I was like, oh man, it's the class that lets you detonate at will and not hurt yourself.
At second level, you start being able to pick, and that's when you can do things like flare or gravity anchor, and you just get a lot more. That's when the class really you're able to start differentiating yourself from the standard build of the two main modes you pick, and I think that's where the class really starts getting interesting. I mean, one of my favorites is Stellar Rush in the Photon mode, which you can wreath yourself in fire and make a charge without penalty, and if you're fully attuned, you can substitute a bull rush for the melee attack at the end, and if you succeed, they take fire damage. You just literally shoulder tackle them with fire.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is called, it's a silly one that you get a sixth level, called Crush, where you just crush someone with gravity, and you're like, ah, suffer mortal. It's great. The Solarian has a very light side, dark side Jedi feel to it in terms of its stellar revelations. You can really see that in, like, one of the ones that you get as Proton is basically Jedi mind trick. It's like, my aura scintillates with hypnotic colors and you do what I say.
In the comparison to Jedi has started ever since the concept of this came out, it's not really a great one-to-one mapping, but it definitely comes up because you definitely have the two light side, dark side, but there isn't like a evil good attachment. This is just literally lights out, lights on, gravity, fire. And you have to balance both, because when you become unbalanced, say I just like, I love graviton modes. I'm going to take nothing but graviton powers. Well, that means that I'm unbalanced on my attunement, and to get fully attuned, I'd need 4 attunement points instead of 3. And since there were already complaints that it takes a while to get fully attuned when you're balanced, that kind of exacerbates that problem. Now, like you said, in Starfinder, that isn't as big a deal, and I think a lot of the early gut check negativity towards that was people used to Pathfinder combat links, where everything's over in 3 rounds anyway, and there's no such thing as a 4th combat round. Well, that's an exaggeration, but you get it. But at the same time, I don't want to wait an extra round to use my biggest powers.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what the logic behind making you balance them or be penalized is. To me, it seems like a really weird design choice. Like, if it were me, I would have been probably like okay with something that was like, it takes 3 for everyone. If you balance them, it takes 2 for you instead. It feels like a weird penalty, and I don't really like that about the class, because it almost doesn't make it like kosher to go full like one element for like a thematic reason. Like, it's always mechanically better to divvy up. I'm not crazy about that part about it, but I think it's cool overall. There's definitely some neat options, and there's a lot of room to expand upon the class.
And then when you get to the Zenith Revelations, the ones that you get at 9th level and again at 17th, is that the correct answer?
Yeah, I think so.
That's when you start seeing some like really powerful iconic modes. So one of them is like, you literally summon a mini star. The 15-foot radius sphere that is a star. Which, hey, that's a lot of coolness thematically, but then of course it's fire and damage and great stuff.
I think the one that's really cool is the one where you're just like, I feel like playing Portal.
Yes, wormholes.
Wormhole.
Yes, yes.
Or how about the one that's like, you know what, oldie but goodie, you're just hasted. Haste for you. Be hasted. Go fast. Oh, gotta go fast.
Nobody's going to object to haste when they can get it.
No. I mean, it's not as strong as haste in Pathfinder, but it's strong enough, you know?
Indeed.
Indubitably. And that's... there's one we didn't talk about. We never talked about sidereal influence.
Okay.
So sidereal influence is sort of like the out of combat ability that the soldier wished it had. Sidereal influence is essentially each day you can meditate, and when you do, you pick a number of skills that are either graviton skills or photon skills. There's a list for each, and they're all very thematic choices. Like protons tends to be about, you know, pushing the radiance of your personality outward and being good at things like diplomacy, intimidate, and, you know, medicine and survival. While gravitons are about being sneaky and deceptive and, you know, sort of shadowy yourself. And what basically, when you get down to it, its sidereal influence is an envoy expertise ability that turns off when combat starts. Like, you cannot use it in combat. It basically says as soon as battles start and you can activate your celestial, your stellar mode, this doesn't work anymore. And you actually have to spend a minute reactivating after a fight ends, which is a little, it can be frustrating, I'm sure, but it's pretty cool. It gives the Solarian an extra bit of edge with skills that a soldier would not normally have. It's another way to differentiate their roles. Mm-hmm. If you want to play a character who is full base attack bonus and is good at skills and you don't want to buy my Starfarer's Companion, then this is a really good choice for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also goes back to like influencing that monastic influence of this class. And so it also is really good to have some out of combat flavor, because a lot of this class is just pure combat skills, and to the point that your attunement, without sidereal influence, your attunement basically only happens during combat and then turns off as soon as combat ends. And that's really metagamey, so I can see why that rubs people a little bit the wrong way, because you're defining a mode of gameplay instead of a simulation of the game's reality. Mm-hmm. And so at least now you have something that isn't combat related, because everything else is all about damage and buffs and really cool wormholes.
I wish there were revelations that a revelation that lets you use sidereal influence in combat. However, mm-hmm. to me, it feels weird that if I want to be a Solarian who's good at fainting and I took the bluff one for graviton, that all of a sudden I'm in combat and now I'm not as good at fainting. Mm-hmm. So I think there's room for growth there too. It feels odd to me, but maybe it's just me.
All right. So let's go ahead and take some questions from the audience.
Yeah, we have a couple. All right. Someone asked us what our favorite revelations were. I believe that was Zergedian 99.
Okay. Oh gosh. Okay, oh, Stellar Aaron Rush is probably my favorite, because I love charging and I love being a ball of fire, and that's just really cool. I know it's not the most powerful, but I just love the visual of it and the gameplay of it, because bull rushing is always great, especially in a sci-fi setting with lots of these platforms that for some reason don't have safety rails.
Yep. Platforms without safety levels will destroy you. It's really funny. I am a big fan of Reflection. The one that's like, hey, you hit me. Blink. I wish like the spell Reflection in Pathfinder was better. And so seeing something that's like, hey, I'm going to shoot you, let me just stop your bullets, mm-hmm. and pew, 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 them right back at you is really cool.
Reynard Wolf points out that there is no OSHA compliance in space. And he's right. No. Because why would there be?
In space, nobody can hear your health code violations.
And if there were safety rails, we would have a sudden lack of Wilhelm screams.
Yeah. That'd be great. I'm excited. We should do it. Let me think.
Now, the builds for this class. Basically, you have a couple of builds that are innate to the class. You can go with these weapon manifestation, in which case you are going to be heavily melee focused. You're going to have a lot of damage output with your cool star black hole weapon, whichever version you want. You're probably going to want to take heavy armor proficiency, because if you're a melee character in Starfinder, you're going to get hit a lot, and you want to mitigate that as much as possible. So you're going to want to buff up your AC with heavy armor proficiency, and then you are going to go to town with these weapons. You're going to want to take a lot of the revelations that are great for a melee, such as the Stellar Rush, which is great. The reflection isn't so bad from Alex, because you're going to be taking those hits. And of course, for the Zenith Revelation, having a nice little wormhole to be able to zap across the battlefield where you want to be, super useful. This build is also, well, focusing on the melee means that you are literally going to be one of the highest damage output in Starfinder, and you're going to have a lot of attacks per round. You're going to be taking a lot of advantage of that and applying it. Whereas if you go with the armor build, say you're going to go with solar armor, that's really going to incentivize you to beef up your ranged attacks, because you could go with, you could just be more, you could go the melee path even with solar armor, but when you were, you then you would be an incredibly mobile melee combatant, because you're not going to be weighed down with heavy armor. But it does, but it, this really leads to taking something like long arm proficiency and specialization, and being able to really hunker down and just lay a lot of fire downrange. So, that plays to this build's strengths. But
I have a counter build for you for Armored Slayer.
Okay.
And I don't think I haven't seen anybody suggest this yet, but that doesn't mean it hasn't. Go Armored Solarium, but instead of going long arm focus, focus on one-handed advanced melee weapons.
Okay, why one-handed?
Well, because the Solarian gets an ability called Flashing Strikes. Whenever they make a full attack with two or more melee with melee weapons, you take a reduced penalty to the attack roll. Right, that's something that all Solarians get. That's not just for the weapon Solarian. If you go armored Solarian, you still get Flashing Strikes as a class feature. And taking that into account, there's a feat called Multi-Weapon Fighting, where if you attack with two or more weapons in a turn, you get another minus one penalty to your full attack. So with those two stacking, I'd have to do more research, and it's something I was working on for an iconic design. But from my off of the cursory math, if you take weapon focus and both of those, theoretically you should have the best attack bonus out of any character in the game, just because you're reducing that penalty so much on a full attack.
Okay.
So you go light armor. You're still very fast. You could still take Solarian Rush. Nothing is stopping you from taking Stellar Rush. Mm-hmm. So you can rush in and take your two little swords and go pew, 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 and be like the blender that the operative wishes it could be.
There we go. I usually expect, like, when I think of melee builds, and I guess in Starfinder, I always like assume the two-hander big beat stick build. So I vary because that two weapon fighting got so downmoded in Starfinder.
Yeah, yeah. But if you think about it, you could take operative advanced weapons, that are one-handed. I'm pretty sure there are some. And if you do that and you take operative weapons, then you could pump up your dex, which would let you meet the dex cap of the light armor you have to wear for Solarian armor, which should give you an armor class that's about as good. It'll be about 1 to 2 points lower. I did an article comparing Solarian and fighter armor class. And so theoretically, you'd be within one or two of a soldier who fully devotes themselves to it. So you'd have a easily top tier armor in the game, and you would have the most accurate strikes. Someone in the chat says there are no advanced melee operative weapons. It would be a shame if those happened at some point.
Well, let's hope that future books fill that gap, because we do know that there is going to be a big book of gear coming out soon, and that Starfinder's equipment needs that book to exist, because that the Starfinder core rulebook got so crammed full of all the things they needed to make Starfinder that pretty much each of the individual sections need expansion. Mm-hmm. Now, We have a question in chat from from ZergTitan99 wants to know what we think of the 16th level revelations, which is really interesting because the 16th level revelations only have two revelations that you can take, one of which is Ultimate Graviton and the other which is Ultimate Photon. Taking either of these revelations increases increases the radio I'm dropping the ball on that one. Anyway.
Allow me to help you, Param.
Go for it.
It increases the radius of all of your proton or graviton revelations, depending on which one you take. Mm-hmm. But I think what's more interesting about them is that all of them empower a small list of other revelations. Yeah. Like, they give you some sort of bonus with them. And I think that is pretty cool, personally. Mm-hmm.
And this is where you can sort of... because it's so high level and you have to pick one or the other when you first hit 16th level, this is kind of where you can declare your specialization, because you're going to be Ultimate Graviton or Ultimate Photon, one or the other, when you choose this. But it's really interesting that the only time you get to really tune into, like, saying, no, I am primarily this mode, is you have to wait so long. But I love the fact that it just ties in with all the previous revelations and not all of them, but a good deal of them, and boosts them up and makes them even more powerful. It's super thematic. It's a great way to tie in all the mechanics together. As far as, like, the power section of this class, I think they did a great job putting a lot of very desirable options to choose from.
Moreover, if you compare the Solarian to the Soldier, the Soldier's benefits tend to be very passive. Mm-hmm. They're things that, like, modify you in the background. There's not a whole lot that give you new options. Mm-hmm. They're things like, now you can do this, but it just augments something you could already do. Mm-hmm. The Solarian is a very active class. It's a class that gives you tons of abilities, and you just use them. And it's up to you to find the combination of abilities that makes you as effective as possible. I kind of think that that is a really cool, interesting way to diversify the class's feeling, and what ability is appropriate for a Solarian versus what ability is appropriate for a Soldier is a little bit more obvious, because we can say, oh, well, this is something that you get more passive. Passive is pretty Soldier. And this is, or this is something that you get more active. Active is pretty Solarian. Indeed.
ZergTitan also asked us real early on, and I think this will lead us into talking about some of the problems the class has, is what do you think are some of the problems, and without changing the core of the class, how would you fix them? I think a lot of the Solarian has its biggest problem is that it is a mad class, multi-attribute dependent. Depending on which build you're going to want strength or dex at fairly high, like most characters. You're going to want a high con, especially if you're going to be a melee character, because you're going to be taking a lot of hits. You need charisma, and you're going to want int to buff up your skills, but it's not so much required. But because there are at least three stats that you're going to want to get up high, this class makes it very hard, at least starting out, to be as effective as other characters that get to focus only on one or two attributes. This does sort of even out as the class levels up, because Starfinder lets you level up multiple attributes at once at various points, and so this does alleviate itself, and that is great. But when you're a low level Solarian, you all have to spread your point. You have to spread your stats out more. You have to make some intelligent decisions that aren't super obvious about your class build when you're putting it together, and you're also your really cool Solarian powers don't really kick in until you get to level 2, because you're at first level, the only cool Solarian powers you get, you have to power all the way up to get, which does take some time. It's not as the big death sentence that is suggested at some of the first knee-jerk reactions to the class, but at that very first level, it doesn't make a great first impression, because you feel a little bit weaker than your other party members, and your cool ability is on a timer that you don't get to access, as opposed to other characters that get to lead off combat throwing out cool spells and really cool attacks with big heavy cannons and trick shots and all the and sending robots out there to shoot people in the back. You don't get to do any of that cool stuff. Now, as you level up, you start getting really cool powers, but that first level experience, I kind of wish they would have swapped that and let you start with one of the lesser powers, and second level, that's when you got your fully attunement double pack.
Oh, man. Shadis in chat says, just do what they did with Altronis. 114, 412s, and an 11.
That's the other big problem with this class.
It doesn't have an iconic that makes the class seem fun. So I am so sorry, Starfinder Society crew. That pregen is the harsk of Starfinder Society.
No, I blame that pregen for most of the negative reception this class got, because it tried to split itself between all of the possible ways a Slayerian could be cool without committing to one. And that meant that it wasn't really good at... You really need to pick whether you're going to be ranged or melee, no matter which of the builds you go with. You need to pick one. Because if you try to be a switch hitter with this class, you're going to really suffer until higher levels when you can get those set stats leveled out. And just like any role-playing tactical game based on D20, it rewards you for specializing more than it rewards you for being a generalist. And that pre-gen with...
True story.
Such low stats spread out so much, like not a lot of resolve points. And that being the first introduction to the class really hurt. I hope they rebuild that pregen to be a little bit better of an introduction to the class, because you can totally build better first level Solarians if you're willing to commit to one of the paths or the other.
Mm-hmm. You know, another problem with Altrondis is that, when you play as a melee in Starfinder, you need to accept the fact that you are probably going down in a one out of every four fights that you do. Mm-hmm. And that is not necessarily always a fun realization, especially on a character that only has two resolve points.
You'll get better just over and over again.
No.
And that's if you don't get Space Plague.
Let the beating stop.
You play your main character in the adventure path is a melee focused character, right?
He is. I play as a melee focused soldier. Mm-hmm. I got literally James and I were reading the affliction rules, and we realized that if we didn't assume they worked like Pathfinder, I probably would have been dead. But I also would have refused to keep on fighting long before I would have died, because we pulled a bunch of encounters that all just piled on the diseases. If there's one thing that's frustrating about book one of Dead Sons, is that Dead Sons underestimates how lethal afflictions are in Starfinder, and they throw a lot of monsters in a very short period of time that all throw the same disease at you, means that you are supposed to progress down the track at lightning speed. You just die. Like, goodbye all notion of normal progression for how diseases work in the real world. You just die. Just drop dead on the floor. I don't have anything else to say about that.
But you have survived the space plague.
I mean, yes, I did survive the space plague. I found out that we kept giving our heavy... Like, we have a party mystic, and the mystic took heavy armor proficiency because they worship Triune. So I was like, oh yeah, you can have that heavy armor. And like, I looked down at my armor, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm wearing level 3 armor and I'm level 5. That's a huge deal in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. Like, so I was like, I'm taking party fund money and I'm going shopping and you can't stop me. I was like, my character will mug yours if you don't let me do this. I can do it. I have the strength score.
All right.
But I think in addition to what you were talking about, one of the big problems that the Solarian has is that it kind of has the same problem as the mechanic, in that it has one class feature with two choices, and those choices are not equal at all. Mm-hmm. I did an entire series of articles examining a soldier who goes all in on armor versus a Solarian. And Generally speaking, the Solarian is off worse. Part of it is the fact that you have to wear light armor, which feels weird when you're an armored Solarian. And the other part is that your Solarian armor ability provides you very small bonuses to AC that you don't feel. Moreover, when you go weapon, you get this cool active thing that you use to beat people and do damage, and you use. Armor is just something that's passive and in the background. So for an armor ability to feel cool, it's got to do something. It's got to give you a power, like an ability that you're like, yeah, my armor is so cool. And so, I say this from experience because my friend Robin that I've mentioned several times in tonight's episode is an armored Solarian in our Dead Sons game. And, you know, we were comparing armor classes and she's like, you and I have the same armor class, talking to me. And I was like, yeah. She's like, did you take any soldier gear boosts or fighting styles to get that armor class? I was like, no. I just wore heavy armor and have a maxed out dex bonus. And that did not make her feel good that when she found out she gave up the Solarian weapon to be adequate to what I have for just getting a feat as a class feature. Mm-hmm. So I truly think that the Solarian armor needs to be something that is addressed in the near future. I tried to address it by writing the Solarian armor crystals that I put in our No Direction blog, and I'm going to come out with a third-party product that gives more of those later, but we kind of need something from Paizo. It can't just be third-party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having nunchucks made out of light, I'm mentioning nunchucks because that's what the Solarian in the Real for Combat podcast use, and I've been listening to that a lot. But having a giant katana made of light or a mace made out of a black hole is just really cool looking. And having better armor can be cool looking. I guess the only reason you wouldn't want to go with the weapon is if you really wanted to be a ranged character and still be a Solarian. At least the armor is not... Is that what, you're not wasting a power? But there's just not a whole lot of your Solarian abilities that... let me rephrase that. A whole lot of the Solarian abilities, especially at lower level, really focus on the melee aspect of the Solarian as opposed to anything else. So it just needs more options if you're going to be going that other option, that other path.
Yeah, and one of the problems I have is that I don't know where they could add that to this class, because the way that all of the revelations are designed, it's not something that is differentiated based on your mode. Literally, your mode is a choice you make at first level, and nothing else in the class impacts that. So if they're gonna do it, they really need to add something outside of the class that Solarian players can get access to that doesn't feel like attacks. That's kind of the problem with making it feat-based. If you make it feat-based, it feels like I need to burn this feat in order to be passable. And since the commonly agreed upon style for playing the Solarian who takes the armor manifestation is I get long arm, and getting long arm means that you're already investing two feats into that. Mm-hmm. You cannot ask your players to invest more feats to make their armor class feature passable, which is why in my article, I came up with the conclusion of doing armor crystals.
Right. Especially but since there's an equivalent already for the weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's something that they're definitely going to need to look at, but I also think that it's something that they're going to need to examine in a player's options book. This has nothing to do with the Solarian, but I think that, you know, we know that Pact Worlds had player content. We know that Armory is going to have player content. I think that 3 years in, we're about ready for like an actual player-focused options book for this game. Like, I think that it's been very dry in terms of like, what am I going to use? Especially because the idea of making players wait for players' options assumes that, oh, well, the players need time to digest the options we've given them. But if your base product didn't have any options that catered to somebody and you don't come out with anything new, then those options still don't cater to people, and it just, you're not going to get those people in to try your hobby. So after a certain point, you need to start adding things that don't stack on top of what you already have, but expand outward. We don't need skyscrapers, we need more city blocks.
And we, like, right now we know that Armory's next. That'll have a lot of player options in it. And then Alien Archive 2 is the book announced after that, which the game needs more Alien. That's also a need the game had, because Alien Archive, as much as we loved it, it was a thin book. And we're going to end up using those aliens over and over and over again if we don't have more supplemental baddies to throw at.
Right. And so here's another thing that I agree with you on that, because I think the idea is that that book comes with really easy to use rules to build aliens, so you don't need to have, you know, tons of pre-made monsters. But to this point, I am still not really sure what the problems in the Pact Worlds are. I actually don't think Pact Worlds did a great job of telling me what I'm adventuring for, to be completely honest. It because, like, when you go into Pathfinder, you're like, okay, I know that the Whispering Tyrant was a problem, but he's got a cult left that still worships him. And you're like, I know that there are all these orcs that are raiding these people. And I know that there is these remnants of an ancient war, and there's mutants everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you know all of these problems that are in the Pathfinder world. Most of what Pact Worlds is, at least in my opinion, is mostly just talking about the society, like, in terms of, like, what culture is like in the Pact Worlds. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the threats are very obvious in that book. They're like, here's a pirate faction. Okay, well, why am I murdering these pirates? Please tell me. Like, we need a book that is preferably not more than 62 pages that is like, these are the things that you need to worry about in the Pact Worlds. These are the issues that are going to come up. These are the people that are trying to cause problems to the government, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think we just need more information about the setting, in addition to more things that people can be in this setting.
Right. So, like, right now, like, the biggest baddie that we're really looking out for are the Aslanti Space Empire, which is going to be the subject of one of the upcoming three-arc adventure paths. And other than that, there's some, but not, like, you're right. There was just so much adversarial content in Inner Seas that we could definitely use some more.
Yeah, and it's like, I grab these the Adventure Path volumes, and each Adventure Path has, like, a page dedicating a new planet. I don't need a new planet. I need you to explain to me what the problems are on the planet I'm already on. Like, do not tell me about some world out in Fifth and Japit Vest when I don't know what I need to be fighting or what's going to try to kill me in Absalom. Like, this is a very small spoiler, so I apologize, but Dead Sons involves a lot of gang fighting, and, like, there's no write-up on these gangs. Like, I don't know if they were invented for this adventure or whether they're, like, a serious gang that, like a Yakuza-style thing that's just been around for a while. And I feel like I should know what might be trying to kill me in this setting, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problems that Alien Archives has, that it doesn't have enough things that are trying to kill me that I don't know what the problems are. Like, I really want to know about the, I can't remember the name of the faction. I think it's called the Enigma or something. It's like the evil group that the Greys belong to, like the secret group that, like, abducts people and does experiments. I want to know more about that, and, like, I don't want to have to wait until an adventure path comes out to see one plot hook that I might have to do with them.
Well, this all boils down to the fact that Starfinder just has a lot less content than we're used to seeing released for the games coming out of Paizo. And I hope that...
Thank you, Shoddius. It's the unseen. Thank you, Shoddius.
So, basically, the solution to all the problems we have is just more pages of content. So we're just We're just asking for more. We just walk up to Eric Mona, please, sir, can I have some more?
So my worry wouldn't be, will Eric Mona give us more? Because I'm sure that if we all go to Eric Mona with wallets open, he will happily pluck from our wallets for more content. But the real question is, like, the Starfinder team just hired several new people. We've met Chris on the show. Mm-hmm. I think there's somebody else, but the name is slipping out of my mind. I'm so sorry, new person. It's not that I don't like you. It's that I don't remember you. But, like, I'm not sure. Can the Starfinder team support a new monthly product? Right. I would love the answer to be yes. I don't know if that's the answer, but I really want it to be yes. Please make it yes. I need a player companion-sized thing of threats.
Yeah, I mean, something. Maybe a bi-monthly soft cover would fill a lot of needs there. Like, I know that it would be a big ask to commit to, like a Pathfinder-sized release schedule of an adventure path and a Chronicles and a campaign setting book and a player option book every single month, and then pawns and maps and everything. At least we're getting the maps. The Starfinder maps have been really cool. We're getting the spaceship from what's the spaceship called in
the Sunrise Maiden. Yes.
We're getting the Sunrise Maiden map, and that looks really cool. It's got like the interior of the ship that you're used to, but the flip side of the map is just where you would come out if it was docked, which is where you're going to be running into trouble. So that's the perfect thing to have on hand for very frequent combats.
I strongly think that they should consider just not doing new worlds for a little bit, and maybe even cutting down on some of like the other like content, and just each adventure path say, hey, we went to this area, here are some more problems in this area. Like, if you're going to the diaspora, here's a list of problems in the diaspora that you could start a different adventure. Or, here's a list of problems in this place. Here's a list of problems in that place. Here is one NPC that has nothing to do with this adventure that wants to murder all life in this system, or whatever. Like, give me more threats. I need more threats to get inspired for how to do this. Or, I mean, other than that, or I'm just going to play my own setting because I can put my own threats in there.
So we need a Starfinder version of the Villain Codex.
I don't necessarily know we need a Starfinder version of the Villain Codex, but we needed the Pathfinder Society Field Guide out of Pact Worlds, and we got something smaller that didn't really talk about what the problems are. Like, in Pathfinder, the assumption is that there are heroes in the world, but they aren't many, and the players need to be the ones to step up to the challenge. I never got a sense of what those challenges were in the Pact Worlds, which I think is a problem when you're trying to make an adventure setting. What does that have to do with the Solarian, though?
Not a whole lot. So overall, I guess, let's give our closing thoughts. Overall, I think the Solarian is a very fun, flavorful class. You can build powerful Solarians and have a blast with them, and it has some of the best active, that's how you're calling them, the best active powers of any of the other characters. I think it's a great class. It does have some weaknesses that we've talked about, but I don't see that it's one of the worst off classes, especially if you know how to build it right or make up for some of its weaknesses, or at least are willing to, you know, just deal with that first level blues that the Solarians have to deal with.
Yeah, totally. They definitely have some issues, but I think this is a class that I don't necessarily know that fixing all of its problems will be easy, but fixing all of its problems is something that should be strived for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely agree with Shadus that it needs more revelations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is. But that's what we've been saying about a lot of the classes, that they just need more. And this, if this had more. But if you're willing to build towards this class's strength, especially if you're going with the melee options and grabbing the weapon and using a lot of the powers that play off of that, you'll have a great time.
Totally. Man, I might have to cancel the topic that I wrote about on Monday. Or not on Monday, but the topic I said I was going to do next week, and just do a Solarian that does multi-weapon fighting.
Yeah,
I'm really into that.
All right, so we're running out of time, so let's go ahead and do any shout outs. Our first shout out, we're just going to reiterate again, thank you so much to Stephen from Roll for Combat for pulling our website out of the fire and helping us relaunch and be able to bring you this content. Super, super great.
Yeah, if you want to help us thank them, check out a couple of their Starfinder videos where they I think right now Jason Keeley is running some of the Starfinder Society stuff, right,
for them. Yeah, he's one of the players in their Starfinder Society game, and that's been a blast. The characters they've put together for that have been hilarious. So and of course their normal games are great too, but I think I like their Starfinder Society stuff best.
Not only that, but Jason Keeley is just awesome. I'm going to shout out to him for no reason. Actually, I do have a reason.
Okay.
Jason, like we said on the last time we were here, Jason Keeley is doing the editing for Everyman Gaming's Advanced Skill Guide book for Starfinder. And oh my gosh, I've come to realize that I never have truly seen the marvels of like a truly masterful editor before Jason Keeley. Like, oh my gosh, like I've had really good editors. I would call them great editors, but like I got Jason's edits back and I was like, this is so good. I can't even, like, it's been overwhelmingly great working with Jason. So if you need someone to edit your stuff, your products, your term paper, whatever, talk to Jason and give him money, because Jason needs more money.
And speaking of Jason Keeley and their next topic, PaizoCon, what's your PaizoCon looking like?
This is a weird PaizoCon for me, because I wasn't sure if I was going to go to it until like late February, and I've had some trouble scheduling like flights and stuff. So I actually do not have a very strong schedule. I think I signed up for one Starfinder game, and I might be doing a special game with no direction. And that's about it. I'm going to do the awesome one where you're on the Eoxian live TV show. And that is literally the only thing that I have scheduled. I have No Direction Live, sure.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. Paizo, we'll be all throughout the con doing our normal recording and everything. But we will also be hosting two panels. I'll be with Alex and Ryan, and we'll be doing an episode of No Direction, no qualifier. It's both Prime and Beyond, all in one show, live! So come in and watch, and you know, come in for that and be on an episode of No Direction. We're also going to be doing No Direction Adventurous Live, where we'll be playing through some of the War for the Crown with most of our players, including the fabulous GM Crystal Frazier, and that's going to be fantastic. And besides the official stuff, I got into Jason Keeley, which is why I brought him up, Keeley's Skittershot game. So I'm going to get to be playing Skittershot as a Skittermander with Jason Keeley. So that's going to be, that's the one
so
thing I'm going to be super looking
jealous.
Forward to.
Ooh, Shottis says that 8-99C is finally up. Solstice Scar Part C. It's the ending to that scenario.
Ooh.
I need to go play. My Kitsune Hunter and his faithful wolf animal companion, I have two out of the three of them done now. I just did Part B at Sealy Court last weekend. So I need to go sign up and do that, because I really want to finish the storyline.
And, of course, if you're going to be at Gen Con, we'll also be there doing our usual coverage and playing. And we're also needing some volunteers, especially for Gen Con. So if you're going to Gen Con and you want to volunteer and help out No Direction, record some seminars, we would super appreciate that.
Parham really needs volunteers, because James and I both sold our soul to the Pathfinder Meat Grinder.
You sold souls!
I mean, last year we were free agents and did whatever we wanted, but James moved this year. He got a new place. So he was like, it's too much money for having just moved. I need to, if I'm going to go, Paizo needs to help me. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, that makes sense. Robin and Matt and I will, Matt Morris, who has been on the show, and we'll all be in a room together, and we'll be serving our Paizonian overlords at the Grand Ballroom, almost the entire convention. So if you sign up for Pathfinder or Starfinder Society adventures, you could have either me or James as a GM. It's a thing. I'm also going to be running Pathfinder 2e playtest almost half of the weekend. I am so excited about that.
Yeah.
It's why I hope that our secret happens, so that, oh, that's not really a secret anymore. Shoot.
Yeah, huh. It's not secret no more.
No! Okay, I'm not saying anything else about it. I am so bad. I'm sorry, everybody.
No problem. Also, we haven't put up a big post about it yet, because we've been dealing with some other stuff. But if you are going to be a volunteer at Gen Con and you're willing to volunteer a significant amount of scenario recordings, we haven't decided on the number, and we'll be real flexible with it. But if you're basically willing to become my sidekick for Gen Con, we will buy your Gen Con ticket.
Wow. Mm-hmm. We are being, whoa, really?
Yeah.
We're doing that?
Yeah, we're going to do that, yes. We will get wow. you a Gen Con ticket if you're willing to be a psychic. I'm not asking for you to sell your soul to No Direction.
Yeah.
But just...
No, your soul belongs to Aram.
No, Lord, no. But record it. Record some... For the basically, if you're willing to record a significant number of the seminars with us, we'll make sure we'll cover your ticket cost to get in.
Maybe we'll even let you eat dinner with us at Scotty's or something.
Oh no! If you're one of our volunteers and you want to hang out with us all freaking con, man, you're welcome to. You're part of the team. I'm gonna make little badges and everything.
So I just want to point out that if multiple people volunteer to become Parham's assistant, the person who has the best version of Parham's hat on their head in their submission picture will probably be chosen. So make sure that make sure you play the part of Parham's assistant by properly wearing the Parham assistant hat.
I can't even find a good replacement for this hat.
No, that's okay. I'm sure we have some artsy people out there who can like make their own or something.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. Until next time, go beyond with No Direction.